Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, reacting to round one, the NFL draft. So I think some notable features of the draft, and then we can sort of get into it just a little bit more here. There was not a ton of mystery at what was going to happen at one, nor at two. Where it really got, I think, interesting was at three. It's where a lot of the breath was held and all that. So, Trey Lance instead of Mac Jones, I think that has a pretty significant influence on rookie drafts and how they're gonna boil out. I track what I call the Jimmy Johnson trade value, basically pedigree chart. So I use the Jimmy Johnson trade value calculator or the trade value chart has been something that's been used in the NFL for decades plus now, multiple decades. And this was, invented by Jimmy Johnson. Basically, it's the value of picks. And it's not perfect. There's not, there's more advanced ones. There's more advanced metrics. And there's more... more sophisticated ones, I would say, but I just use it as a simple proxy for pedigree. Like I just tell me how much value is in a draft. And this class, so I can compare, it allows me to compare classes. It allows me to just get an idea of, where certain classes rank and basically historically, within positions specifically. So I look back since 2000. This is the most draft pedigree for any quarterback class this century, and it's not done yet. So it's by a pretty big margin. The average is just over 6,000. So is the median. The high is 10,100 set this year. So that's pretty, I think it's pretty notable because it's just, you get all these guys going up really high, and that's basically what happens, right? You get five guys in the top 15, three in a row, bang, 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 and there you go. Give you an idea, this is about, it's about 10, maybe 15% or so. Yeah, about 15% over the highest for any other year. So this is a big quarterback class. Obviously, you didn't need me to tell you that. The other features here, obviously, Pitts gives a huge advantage out of being that high in the draft. So this class, just with Pitts alone, it ranks 13th out of out of the classes since 2000. Running backs really lagging just because you've had two guys a little bit later in the draft, so they haven't gotten there yet. They're the worst 22nd. And then the wide receiver class is at 15th, and you're going to look here. They got 61-30 in terms of points. I think you're going to get, you might get four or five guys in the early part of the round. You're going to get, you'll get some pretty quick squeeze going on here in terms of that really ticking up. So I think you can get, it might not necessarily be a top 3 to 5 class, but I wouldn't, top 10, I think is plenty in range, with how we're at. So, like I said, the running backs kind of down the dial a little bit. We'll see what they aggregate in day two. That's the overall reaction. I did get tipped off on some information, from a source that had some reasons to know, there was some negative feelings out of Ohio State about Justin Fields. They talked him down, thought that he might have used epilepsy as an excuse not to practice in certain times, where he could have went and didn't go, and that's some of what happened. So I don't know. I don't know if there's truth to that or what, but I think that would explain some of the fall. I am not going to treat him any worse than a top 10 quarterback. So I think it's worth noting here, and hard thresholds are really tough, because a lot of what I'm trying to convey, a lot of what I'm trying to talk about, I like to have simple rules and simple, just like kind of rules of thumb that, we can sort of think about, we can sort of use as proxies to talk about. So we talk about warp, we talk about top 12 seasonal finishes, top 24 seasonal finishes, top 10 picks. It's more complicated than that, obviously. Right? If you play six games and are a top 12 running back, top 24 running back, excuse me, like that's, you've really kicked butt. If you've played 16 games and started all of them and are running back 23, like, okay, that's nice, but it didn't really help all that much. So, you know, there's obviously some range in there. I use top 10 as just a simple heuristic just to think about. So that way you can sort of, you know, when you're sort of tiering groups together and all that stuff, that's really how you're thinking. That's really how I think about it in terms of all that. I could go down to like 12. I could pick 13, whatever. 10 is just a simple, hey, this is it. I think if you go down to 12 and 13, where, you know, including, I think that include Watson, I think he was at 12 or 13, right? We could sort of juice up the numbers even more for the top, whatever. That range, it's not a drastic cliff from 9 to 11. And so that's, I'm not treating it like that. I'm treating him like a top 10, top 12 pick. I could adjust that number around. I'm not going to sort of do that. And I think it conveys something a little bit different, and we can sort of keep him in that top 10 sort of strata because there's four guys, right? There's him and, you know, three other guys. And so because of that, I mean, you can sort of treat him in that same group. I do think Jones falls out of that a little bit. Once you see so many teams pass, I think that's, you know, no one really traded up, right? I do think it's a little bit different from him. There's a gap there. You know, but I the other thing I would say too is when you're looking at the gap, you can say, hey, like, again, if Mac Jones, if three of these guys weren't in this class, where would Mac Jones go? He'd go higher. So I can sort of see the balance there. I think from, he falls off the back tier to me, just because I think he doesn't offer the running upside. And if he was going to be a top three pick, right, we could sort of balance that out a little bit. Hey, he's going to a really good system. He's going to you know, San Francisco, they got a really high floor, yada, yada. You do all those things. At 15, it's a little bit bigger of a gap. So I don't necessarily think he's got that same, all the same arguments in support of him. So I'm interested in the landing spot. I think from, you know, him going from Alabama to New England, we know the link between Saban and Belichick. So we'll see. I mean, it's I think it's probably maybe a little bit later of a reveal. I could see a scenario though where he's a week one starter. I could absolutely see that. I don't think Cam Newton has a lock on that job. They haven't invested in him like they have a lock on that job, and so that's really the thing there is, I think, you know, you're not making a selection at 110 in a rookie draft for week one production. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. That's not what we're investing in. We're investing longer term. I think he's the quarterback five that I would take. I would probably have him at the bottom. And if I sort of had to stack the board as I sit here right now, again, reserving the right to change as I sort of get more information, think a little bit more about it. As I sit here right now, I think that the scenario is Lawrence. It's probably a tier break after that. And it's then Fields and Lance would be my preference. I'd probably have Zach Wilson in that same tier. I'd have him at the bottom of the tier. Again, we're recognizing the fact that we don't know, and we're not particularly good at predicting these things. So I sort of put them all in there. You know, I think if Zach Wilson's going to fall off the back of that top three tier, right? So if you see basically 1, 2, 3 in rookie drafts of the quarterbacks, and then you get running backs, you get wide receivers, you get tight ends, and all of a sudden, like, Wilson's popping up at like 8, whereas the top three guys are going 1, 2, 3, like, that's going to be a target spot. So, yeah, so that's pretty much my take on the position. I do think that there's a couple of really significant veteran situation. So for Cam, this really hurts Cam. Obviously, he's going to be on a short time window here. I'm not sure what he offers long term. Is he going to be able to rehabilitate his image? Is he going to want to sort of be a backup? What's that going to look like for his career? That's problematic. The other thing, you know, the big trade up for Justin Fields by the Bears, that's going to cap Dalton a bit. And I was surprised that this front office was allowed to do that, to be honest with you. Just given that they're on real thin ice is the common word out of, with regards to their, you know, with regards to their, front office and their coaching staff. And if that's true, you're allowing that staff to mortgage future assets. I don't know. It's an interesting situation there altogether. I do think though that the value is good. You basically get to redeem yourself, right? You get to redeem your Trubisky mistake. And listen, mistakes are made. I don't hold that against them. Those mistakes are made. There's plenty of reasons to be skeptical of Patrick Mahomes. I think there were less reasons to be skeptical of Deshaun Watson. Heck, maybe they knew that there was problems there. I don't know. And ultimately, right, they picked wrong. You know, we'll see if they get this one right. So that's the what I think's interesting about that situation is it's almost instantaneously becomes the best quarterback that Allen Robinson's ever played with, and he hasn't taken a snap in the NFL. We can pretty comfortably say that. So that'll be notable there. You know, what's the longevity? If those two hook up, play well, is Robinson potentially back there? You know, I do think you have Anthony Miller, you've got Darnell Mooney. You don't have a ton of assets, and you basically mortgage future capital. And so how do you sort of backfill that if Allen Robinson's not the guy? You've got Jimmy Graham, you got Cole Kmet, you've got the running backs, but you don't really have great weapons out there to help Fields. I think Fields can help himself on the ground and insulate himself going forward, you know, especially early on in his career. So as he's developing as a passer, so you might not necessarily feel a ton of capped upside because of the lack of the receiving position, but I think that'll be a situation here as we go forward. We will have to monitor. For other spots here at the quarterback position, I think, you know, like I said, I think it kind of caps Dalton, it caps Newton. We'll see there. You know, Locke and Bridgewater are intact. So is Darnold. So all those situations were ones I was watching to see, you know, were they in the business of Aaron Rodgers? Were they in the business of Justin Fields, Mac Jones? Nope, they passed on him. And now we'll see. You know, I think I think Darnold's potentially, you know, the guy this year. We'll see in Denver. They don't have an answer on their roster, and that's about the worst position you can be in, right? When you kind of know you don't have the answer. And you don't have any outs. Right? That's not a good one. This is great news for Matt Ryan. So he's insulated now. He's insulated for the next couple of years. Feel really good about that. They add another weapon in there in Kyle Pitts. Hey, maybe he loses Julio. Julio's been banged up and stayed healthy. Get some concerns there. They're going to backfill that in with Kyle Pitts. Yeah, Calvin Ridley. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty nice situation. You got a really good offensive staff who – essentially, when you look at the decision that Arthur Smith had to make about where he wanted to go, he could have went anywhere, and he chose Atlanta. And probably with choosing Atlanta, he chose Matt Ryan. If we're being honest with ourselves, he chose Matt Ryan and the stability of that franchise. But really, that's not a situation that was particularly – good, right? Outside of Matt Ryan and some of the pieces, they're gonna take a bath in terms of some of the cap stuff. You know, they got a lot of work to do in that front. They've got some deficiencies, but he chose Matt Ryan and chose the franchise, and I think that sort of shows here, right? Is that's probably part of the reason why he went there. I think that's good news for Matt Ryan. Yeah, I think we could see 2-3 year window here in Atlanta, and then be fine. Goff's the other one. Yeah, there was some thought. I thought I would take I'd take Fields if he's gonna fall, like take him. But they stick with Goff. They believe in him. Former front office from the Rams there as the GM for Detroit. So you got plenty of connection there between the two. So that's pretty nice in terms of insulation for Goff. I think the biggest winner, maybe of the entire quarterback night in terms of the existing guys, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Washington basically has no ability at this point to really go up and get a guy. Could have went up and got Fields maybe. I guess could have went up to get Mac Jones. They don't. And ultimately, I think that really insulates Fitzpatrick. So if you were to say, like, hey, over under 16 and a half games for the rest of his career, I'm taking the over. Because I think he can absolutely play them into a playoff spot, a late pick. It's going to make it really tough to replace him. And at that point, he's probably gonna warrant, you know, more starts. So that's really my thought with him. I think he's a really interesting play in 2021 as well. You know, we added him in a league where we actually had Goff and Wilson in a start two quarterback league. We didn't have a third, and he could potentially slide in as a two, right? He might even slide in ahead of Goff in our lineup consideration. So yeah, those are really the big things there. So I'm pressing in for Ryan for sure. I'm really interested in him. I think he's got upside, and they run a ton more play action with him now. I think it could be really really compelling, you know, upside there for him. Some other ones here for the running back position. You know, I went and I looked, and I, the worst way to address the production for the running game is to draft a running back. The Steelers moved on from Alejandro Villanueva. Their center Pouncey also retired, and you know, there's holes, and so they don't go that route. They address the running back position instead of the offensive line. And we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes. This is something they want. It's an identity thing. Again, I think the easiest way to do it is run Benny Snell out there behind a better offensive line. So we'll see. We'll see. I think that's an interesting watch. I don't think it's the great situation that everyone talks about. Travis Etienne to Jacksonville was a surprise. You know, I tracked a lot of mock drafts, and there were no mock drafts having them draft a running back, and I thought that maybe there was a lot of wisdom there in that, and that's a lesson learned, because I did not see I was open really open to the idea that James Robinson was at risk, really open to it, and then there was just absolutely nothing in terms of the digging that I did, and that's really, really interesting, and something we'll have to be mindful for of next year and in future years. But, you know, I'm not really exposed to James Robinson very much. I think I might have had one rogue share that I think I traded at some point along the line. So not really exposed there. I thought he had a good case to sustain. So again, I wouldn't be the way I would attack the position, but I guess I get it. There's a quote out from Urban Meyer saying, yeah, James Robinson's our one, Carlos Hyde's our two, and Travis Etienne's our third down back. It's like, what the hell did you just spend a first round pick on if you're going to use that? I haven't trusted Urban Meyer to run offense in quite a long time. So this is a college coach scouting college running backs, and they have a much different value than they do in the NFL. So all that said, I don't know what that is. I'm going to just trust the pedigree and think that talent's going to win out ultimately over time. And that's really my take on it. At this point, I'm sort of tentatively have Harris and Etienne sort of next to each other on my board. I would take Harris above Etienne at this point. I have to sort of sleep on that, think about it a little bit more. I can have a hard time seeing the argument for Chase over Harris. I guess I can see a little bit of the argument for Chase on par with Etienne. So I'm not sure that actually puts a tier in there with Chase and sort of how that all works out and how I'm going to depict that on the board. But that's just my initial thought. I want to get a little bit more information here in terms of what they're thinking with Etienne. So yeah, that's the big deal. Again, then I think the next thing to watch for is Javonte Williams. If Javonte Williams goes early, does that, you know, you have teams with needs, right? You've got Atlanta, you've got the Jets, you've got Cincinnati arguably has got needs. I mean, you've got a whole list of Miami, right? You could see a good number of running backs here go on day two, just because there's teams with needs and trying to address needs, and maybe more than you would otherwise think that maybe deserve. So that's really the big takeaway there. We'll be on the watch for that and sort of see how that all boils out. I think if you're going to tell me like the quality of the class, like, hey Jordan, like give me one thing you can look at to how I get a classes. Tell me how many running backs go on day two. Because that sort of gives you a lot of options as you go forward. So be on the lookout for that. That'll be something we'll be tracking. The wide receiver position is fascinating because you get a bunch of guys who've got – you've got one guy who's an absolute dominant dude in Ja'Marr Chase. He's going to reunite with Joe Burrow. I think this is the right pick. In fact, I'm very adamant that this is the right pick. Taking him over Sewell, I think – was the right play because they have options at tackle. They don't have a need at tackle. They've got Jonah Williams, got another tackle on the other side. There's still ways to address the position on day two, and Ja'Marr Chase is an absolute stud. And when you sort of look at do all that, right? I think Ja'Marr Chase is the dude. You don't necessarily have a need. You sort of break in ties, like, you know, which one gives me the most ceiling? I think Ja'Marr Chase does, and I love the pick. I think it's a great pick. I am burned. I am skeptical of wide receiver hit rates. It's something that we don't see a great deal of success with typically. And as a result of that, I am, when you give me the option to go running back or wide receiver in a rookie draft early, yeah, I think you got to go running back. It's like a 2-to-1 warp situation. You just got to go running back. That said, I can see the argument with him and Etienne with some of the nonsense that's coming out of Jacksonville. I want to read a little bit more on that, listen a little bit more on that. It'll be something we think about here over the next 24, 48 hours, try and get that all settled on the board. But he's up there. I think he's up there with, you know, ultimately how you break the tier is kind of up to you. But I think he's probably belongs sort of in the tier or right below maybe Harris, and then maybe you put Etienne and him and Pitts. You know, I have to figure all that out. But he's in a tier by himself at wide receiver. The tier is after that for the position. Devonta Smith's interesting. There's just a lot of questions I have about his profile. Again, his cost will be a big deal. I think that's really what we're going to watch for here. Is he going to be wide receiver 3? Is he going to be running back, wide receiver 9? That spread would be a big difference. I do think he's going to be forced up into a situation where we don't take him. It's just too many questions. Lack of production early, his size profile, all that stuff really points to some hesitancy. I actually don't, if we're going to sort of bet against profiles, I don't hate it for Jalen Reagor. And Jalen Reagor isn't a player that I think we need to go out and pay up for right now. But if you could sort of get him throw-ins, if people are trying to give him away, you know, if it's a third round equivalency, I think that's absolutely a situation I could target, because I think it's a direct arb against Devonta Smith. And I think that's really a really interesting way to sort of make the bet against Devonta Smith's profile. You can A, not take him, and B, bet against him. And I think a really good bet against him is Jalen Reagor, especially if you're going to get him at a deep, deep, deep discount. So if you can get like a third round equivalency on him, I'm interested. I'm interested in that. Do I want to pay like early second? No. You know, is he a slide back piece? Someone want to slide up and use Rager to do that in a tier where, you know, you want to move from, you know, I don't know, someone wants to move from like, you know, 112 or you know, 203 to 112 and give you Jalen Rager. Like, I think that's actually a pretty compelling and interesting idea, assuming that one of the target guys like Mac Jones isn't there at 112. Jalen Waddle, without the breakout, is really interesting in terms of how that's gonna look. I am beholden to the base rates and the hit rates, and that's all the stuff that I really, really, really think about a lot with these guys. Is you know, are we making the proper bets? Is that what we're doing? Are we making the proper bets? Are we using the data that we know historically has worked and sort of making those bets? Again, it's not the end all be all, but they're really, really, really good rules to live by. And how many exceptions do you want to make in a class? Because then I'll tell you how your process is. And you know, if you want to be, you know, if Javonte Williams ends up, I don't know, round two, he goes early, gets a good landing spot, whatever. You're like, maybe I'll have him over Etienne. Be like, all right, well then, yeah, but I'm gonna take Devonta Smith at wide receiver three or Jalen Waddle at wide receiver three. I really like the landing spot. It's, you know, it's the Alabama thing. It's all this stuff. Like, you start doing that 2-3 times, and you're like, wait a second, I'm constantly living by exceptions, and that's the thing I think we really need to be cautious about. That's why I use a lot of those. Like, hey, it's first round, it's top 10. It's those sorts of things, because we're trying to create simple rules that we can understand and follow. That's not meant to be totally complicated. We can get complicated, we can get geeky, all that stuff, and I will do it gladly. But I think with a lot of the stuff, like, if you just sort of understand simple rules and try and follow them and don't make a ton of excuses not to follow the rules, you'll be better off in the long term. Again, will individual bets work out? It's tough to say, right? I think we're putting ourselves, by making the proper bets, using the proper process, I think we're putting ourselves ahead in the long term. Is that in this individual opportunity, is that what's going to happen? Or are we sort of making a, hey, if we do this 10 years in a row, we're going to be way, way ahead after those 10 years. And that's really what it is. So when you look at these, you know, Jalen Waddle never broke out to 20%. So that's a 0% hit rate in the first round. That's a big question. Listen, Kadarius Toney did. And a first round guy, you use that 20% breakout at 21 years old. Again, it's not great. Never got to 30%. And from an age adjusted perspective, 20% at 21 years old isn't, you know, we're not really going to, you know, get a postcard and write home to our parents about it. But it has shown historically to be better than not breaking out. You know, it's not as good as you just sort of look at the 18, 19 year old guys. They're like 69% hit rate guys. When you look at the 20 and 21 year old breakouts, that's about half of that. So 31%. I will say there becomes a point that Kadarius Toney becomes a target player. And I don't know exactly where that's going to be. But I think it could be, like, he could be a third round super flex pick. And I talked about quite a bit with Katie Flower. She disagreed with me pretty strongly, which is fine, right? There's plenty of debate that could be had. I trust myself to sort of see where the market is going to go on a lot of these things, especially in rookie drafts, because I can just kind of read narratives in terms of what's going to build. And I think with Toney, people are going to Gettleman this, you know, Gettleman sucks. People are going to say Daniel Jones sucks. You know, oh, there's all these weapons. That offense is really fragile. And, you know, he has lots of problems. And I don't think it was a good pick. But that said, if he's going to be like a third round rookie pick, like, you have to take him there. You just have to. Because you're going to be competing against late day two wide receivers. You're going to be competing against round four, round five running backs, you know, late day two, maybe early day three tight ends and crummy quarterbacks. And again, this is one of those things where you're like, okay, If there's, you know, seven running backs on day two, we're probably not in that decision. If there's going to be two running backs on day two, or there's going to be, you know, there's going to be Javonte Williams, maybe Trey Sermon, and then a guy like Kenny Gainwell, who we're not super interested in, then all of a sudden there's just a dearth of talent in that range. And you can say, like, we can say, all right, like, Kadarius Toney didn't break out until later and all that stuff, but you're going to get Jaylen Waddle going a round plus ahead of him in rookie drafts. I mean, that's a split I think you have to bet on. So, and again, I'm at this point, I'm willing to embrace randomness. I'm willing to embrace, you know, cheap, real thrift shop discounts on random bets. Like, I'm fine with doing that, especially if it's going to be real late. And I'm talking, again, I am talking like second, third turn in rookie drafts, because I think that's where he's going to ultimately end up, would be my guess. You know, I did see some stuff today where people are already like, oh yeah, I'm absolutely not taking him. Be like, all right, like, if that's going to be the case, I can make an endorsement of him late. Again, he hit the 20%. It's not great. But if wide receiver four, if he's going to be wide receiver 11 in rookie drafts, like, there's a spread there. At some point, you just have to kind of just plug your nose and take it. So we'll see how that all boils out. I'll be really interested on day two how some of these guys go. There will be guys with better day two profiles. If you sort of look at the 18, 19-year-old breakouts, Elijah Moore, for example, should go ahead of Toney. If he's on day two, he should definitely go ahead. Tylan Wallace, historically, is much better. You know, Rondale Moore as well. But I think you could see a scenario where, like, if Rondale Moore goes round three and it's going ahead of Kadarius Toney, like that's, you know, Rondale Moore at that point, that subset of guys is a 28% hit rate. Kadarius Toney's a 31% hit rate. So again, if there's a big spread there, it's probably not hugely statistically significant, but we're looking at profiles and saying, all right, like, there probably shouldn't be that big of a spread between those profiles. Yeah, so that's the big deal there. Again, I think the other thing too is what might kind of screw this up a little bit and make it a scenario where we might not get a ton of falling pedigree is you're going to get like Bateman, who goes to Baltimore and is in a situation I don't think people are going to love. And is a player that I could have totally got on board with him being wide receiver two in this class if he went to Green Bay, if he went to some other place. Again, situations change quickly. You know, if Marquise Brown retired tomorrow, Rashad Bateman might walk into like a 25% market share in that offense. Situations can change quickly. I don't expect Marquise Brown to retire, but you sort of get the point. If he's injured, if he's you know, if he just kind of fades, and, you know, there's opportunity for Bateman. I think the other thing when you look at this, you know, we're going to assume rational coaching, which always can do us a disservice, but they need to score and they need upside in their offense. And to beat Kansas City, you're going to need to sort of do that. And they run what, bottom five offense in terms of wide receiver routes run, wide receiver yards, receptions, all that stuff. Not good. What do? Recognize that and go after it. So I do think that there's some opportunity there for Lamar to potentially extract more out of the receiver position. And my question with them is, was the lack of receiving production a product of their decisions? Or was it a product of, you know, was that a conscious decision? Or was that a product of necessity? Right? Did they say, listen, we don't think Lamar Jackson can throw to wide receivers, so we're just not going to really invest there? Or it's that, hey, we made a bunch of bad investments that haven't really panned out, and now as a result of that, we're going to really work our offense away from the receivers because we don't have any good ones. This signals to me that. So, you know, so I do think that there's some potential upside there for Bateman. I'm going to do a specific deep dive on Baltimore probably here over the next couple of days, and get some more on that, just so I can make a little bit stronger recommendation looking in terms of the offensive structure. So Waddle's probably going to be an avoid if he's going to be a top five guy. You know, there's just so many uncertainties in that. I think if we can get, you know, if we can get a first round guy and wide receiver 10, we're probably going to be interested, you know, and that would sort of be my thought process. I think there's going to be some day two guys that are going to go up there pretty high. Pitts is obviously the big one as well. I think he's up there, you know, depending on the format. Yeah, I think matters a bit. If it's tight end premium, he's probably going to force himself into being a flex play I would imagine he could be a flex play as a rookie, which has some additional value. You know, I can see him up there kind of at the top of the board. I would take Harris above him. If you sort of wanted to put, Pitts, ETN, and Chase in a group there, I think that's fair as well. And sort of break between those. So that if you wanted to take in a tight end premium league, if you wanted to take Pitts at non-quarterback two, I don't necessarily think that's wrong. If you want to take him out of Chase, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. And so that's really it. Things we're looking for in the next day. We look for the running backs. Obviously, where do receivers go off? Elijah Moore is a big one. Damani Brown's a big one. I think he's going to fall in drafts. Terrace Marshall's one as well. Where does he go? You know, what's the day two quarterback situation look like? That's always the most overblown narrative in all of dynasty or in all of draft prognostication. So we'll see. We'll watch for that and see where all that goes. So that'll pretty much do it for this episode. Again, I'm going to get some sleep here. It's 2:30 Eastern time as I'm finishing this up. Get some sleep, think about this a little bit more, start putting the board together. I've started tentatively doing it. I'm sort of incorporating the tiers. And I've incorporated the tiers for quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. I haven't put Tony in yet. I have to make an adjustment to the dynamic density for the rookies. I didn't realize it was a mistake with it. So I've got to adjust for the rookie incorporation and all that stuff. So I will do that here over the next few days. That's a kind of a second order problem because you're, you know, just check your base rates and that's fine. We're more worried about rookies right now than we necessarily are, where they fit in with the vets, precisely right now in those tiers. So, my goal is to get to it by like close of business Monday. And if I can sort of get it, you know, as we sort of go along, I'll do that too. But that's the veteran tiers, you know, the all player tiers. Right now it's the rookie board and the rookie process that we're really working through. So I will get to that. If it's not updated before, you know, Sunday night, by the end of Tuesday, I'll have all that figured out. And, you know, so that way when you're getting into startup drafts and all that stuff, you'll sort of get an idea. It does have the RDP and all the implied stuff in there as well. So that'll be it. I'll do a pod here on some of the poll stuff that I put out, as we go along as well. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, until tomorrow, enjoy the day before the draft, before draft day two, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Until next time, keep embracing variance. We'll talk again soon.